hard to turn down that music, especially on a Monday morning. What's got to be done, it's got to be done. Hello and welcome to WNHH Radio's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Mayor Tony Hart makes New Haven tick morning and night. She's here in the WNHH studio for her weekly Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in the Elm City. Welcome, Mayor Hart.
Oh, it's great to be here, Paul.
Nice to see you. You already got a hello here from Haji, the alder, said, what happened to the old Afro-Semitic experience? Actually, Haji, this is this very same song we always play. I just started a little early, and we're in the improvisation mode. Thank you for asking. It's Eliyahu HaNavi. And Cal May Cal says hello. And we're going to say hello to Gateway Community College and Bertram Moses PC to thank them for providing some financial support for today's program. If you have a question for the mayor and your name is not Bob, feel free to do it through Facebook Live. You go to the New Haven Independent Facebook Live Facebook page, and then you'll see the video right there. You can pop the question. Haji already did, asking about the Afro-Semitic experience. Thank you for that question. And Bob has been known to call in. So Mayor Hart, 5 weeks to winter.
Yeah, how about that?
So we're going to have to start thinking about snow in 5 weeks.
No, I don't think so. I think we're already thinking about
it. We're already thinking about snow? It's only fall. Why are we thinking about snow?
Oh, my goodness. We had a horrendous storm.
Yeah, that was a pack the wallop.
I guess
from the middle of winter when it felt so huge, but it stopped New York in its tracks. People didn't get home for like 8 hours.
Well, and a lot of people had difficulty getting home here. So
it
was difficult.
They didn't have snow tires and stuff, yeah.
And I think that people thought, oh, it's just going to be an early dusting. Famous last words, right?
Yeah. I was seeing cars. I walked home and it was really nice, but people were stuck on the street that couldn't get up hills and things like that.
Oh, no, I know. My daughter had trouble getting in our driveway, so.
So what was there any impact for the city? How did you deal with that storm? Because we didn't even shovel, which turns out we should have. And then we eventually did shovel because we thought the rain and the warmer temperature would take care of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we prepared for the storm. But one of the things that I learned is that if you have a below zero day, that, you know, even though you may treat the streets, doesn't really work. It has to be a little bit warmer for it to work. And so I think a lot of the treatment that occurred really didn't work. And the snow, the other thing that impacts it is how quickly the snow comes down. And the snow came down rapidly.
More than we thought it was gonna, and it was heavy.
Yeah.
And very slippery.
And cold.
And then a lot of places also combined with leaves, because it made a lot of leaves fall off the trees.
Yes, I was noticing that too. Yeah.
Now that global warming is playing with our heads so much, you know, you kind of had different seasons get mixed together.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how normally this week is a pretty mild week, and there's still a lot of leaves on the trees, so things are changing. But when you think about what is going on in California, I mean, we just are so blessed that our problem is water.
That's true. That's true. And that we have enough water. I didn't even think about that part. I know they say even like half a state away, you can't breathe. It's worse air than China.
Yeah, no, it's really.
We sent a air purifier to our daughter in Oakland, yeah.
Okay, and my friend has a daughter who lives in right outside of San Francisco, and she wears a mask.
Wow.
So it's amazing.
And they always had the better weather out there. So I feel very badly for them what they're going through, but it's kind of funny to think it's nicer to be in New England than Oakland. Oakland's a really nice,
especially after a snowstorm, right?
Yeah. So you've been going, Mayor Harp, to management team meetings.
I have been.
Those
yeah.
are great. I call that the first level of democracy in New Haven, neighborhood management team meetings that start out just talking about police, but they become, in these districts, ways for developers or other people, health people, workers to come to neighborhoods and see what people think and connect with them.
Right.
And so you've been, how many have you been to so far?
3.
Okay. And you went to Westville, I know, last week.
Went to Westville. We've been to Dwight. And then we were also on the East Shore.
And so why are you going to management team meetings?
Well, you know, we're going because I think it's important. There's been so much misinformation about the budget and how it's put together and how much more taxes people are paying, and without really sort of seeing the long view of my administration. And I thought it was important for us to be able to, one, explain to people how we build a budget, what kinds of things the budget pays for, where we get our resources for the budget, so where the revenue comes from. Some of it comes from, a lot of it comes from the state, some from our taxpayer dollars. And then as we sort of look at the time that I've been mayor, what's happened with that revenue and those revenue sources. And so,
in other words, the state's cut back. So one fact, and you brought this up last week, and I want to understand a little better. It seems like one of your goals here, and tell me if I'm wrong, is to explain to people that while they saw the headline, and it was an announcement, property taxes went up 11% last year. That you said in reality the total amount you're paying is not 11% more than what you were paying 5 years ago, and that it's less when you talk about effective tax rates. When you pay on the same house in other cities, it's actually a lot less than they would pay in Bridgeport or Hartford or Hamden.
Sure, you know, because I think you kind of have to look at where you're situated. So one of the things that I thought was fascinating is that there are many streets in New Haven that go into another city, and oftentimes you don't even know you're in another city. So Shelton Avenue, for example, in New Hallville. And so the question that I asked is, if you live two doors down in Hamden, would you be paying, and you have the same three-family house, would you be paying less than you pay in New Haven or more? And of course, we know that you'd be paying more. And so we looked at that on Forest Road, going into West Haven. Again, you'd be paying more. And then we also looked at, and I believe it was Quinnipiac Avenue, and going into to North Haven. And we were surprised, even though they have a lower mill rate, that you would actually be paying a lot more.
Is that because houses sell, the property values are higher there?
I think the property values are
but isn't it a different reason in Hamden and West Haven? Because North Haven does have a very low tax rate. They just basically gave their city to corporations. They didn't do environmental regulation. They didn't charge them much in tax, whatever. But they had that one strategy, which I obviously just displayed my bias, but some people think was fine. But Hamden and West Haven is a different story, right? They have higher effective tax rates. So it's not just if you had the same house, but if you had the same house that sold for the same amount of money, right?
Right, right. Then you would pay a higher mill rate.
Yeah. So now tell me about that. How is 11% not 11%?
Well, it's 11% of the, if you sort of look at the mill rate, you know, it went down last year because we had an assessment. So, but if you look at over the 4 years that I've been doing budgets, it's 3%. And so
it's gone up 3% in the 4 years.
It's gone up 3% and 1.5% from last year in terms of the overall cost. What of
now, are you talking about 3% in spending or taxes?
In spending.
Spending, okay.
And so what happened was that the state cut us by.
Oh, so what you're saying is that our spending went up only 3%.
Oh, our spending went up only 1.5%
in 1 year, but the tax went up 11% because of other money that went down.
Yes.
I thought there also was the issue of effective tax rate because of reassessment, and also when you judge against other cities. Like, I thought we were 25% below Bridgeport for the same mill rate, effective mill rate.
Well, you know, I know that their mill rate is, what, at about 55, and ours is at 42.9, I believe, yeah.
Okay. Well, there's also Bob. Bob, let's see if Harry Joes has our system working again. Are you on the phone there, Bob?
Yes, I am.
All right. Modern technology comes to the independent radio station. Bob, you're on with Mayor Harp. What you got to ask today?
Hello, Mayor. How are you?
Good, Bob. How are you?
Okay. I don't know. Have you talked about the election, Paul?
No, we plan to. You can get that rolling if you'd like. Yes, the candidate,
sure.
Tony Harp, endorsed early out of the box. One.
I wanted to say that I kind of was right about the way the election went.
You're always right,
big
Bob.
Cities, well, the big cities voted for Ned Lamont, especially New Haven, because when I went to bed election night, it was like the wee hours of the morning, Lamont was losing. And when I woke up, I saw, you know, he was ahead. And then the next thing I heard was Stefanowski conceded. So what do you think about the election, Mayor? And did it go the way it's planned?
Well, it went the way that I had hoped that it would go. I supported Ned Lamont early on, and even before the primary. And I think he's someone who genuinely cares about Connecticut. He also cares about the urban cities in Connecticut, which I think is really important, certainly for New Haven, but also for the state. I think he really gets the fact that Connecticut's going to grow, it's going to prosper, based upon how well its cities do. And so I was happy to support him. The other thing is that he taught at Harding High School for at least a year, because he recognizes how critically important it is in our urban areas to have access to great educational opportunities. And so all of these things, in my mind, made him a person that had values that I thought were consistent with the way in which I believe our state would grow and develop through really valuing our urban areas. And so I was happy that at least our urban areas felt that way. I mean, it was really close in the suburbs, but if it weren't for our cities, Bridgeport, Hartford, and especially New Haven, Waterbury, he would not be our governor-elect today.
And we are going to get back after Bob's phone call to that, especially New Haven part. Bob, did you have other questions?
Hold on one second. Do you think that we will have tolls on the highways and we'll have recreational marijuana in Connecticut?
You know, I'm really not certain. I'll tell you what, though, when I drive to Boston, they have tolls, and they have all these different amounts depending upon whether or not you're a resident of Massachusetts or not, and the type of device that you may have to calculate the tolls. And you don't even notice them until you look up and say, oh, what are those things hanging over there? And, you know, I just think that the fact that we haven't had tolls for, what, 25 years has created a problem with our ability to keep up with the maintenance and development of roads that we need in our state.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much for calling.
I have one last question.
All right, one last question for Bob.
And I know I've asked this several times. Do you think at all, at some point, you'll be part of his administration?
No, I don't. I mean, I think I will be a partner with him as mayor of the city of New Haven, because we absolutely are dependent upon the state and its support of our cities, and so I hope to work closely with him on behalf of New Haven residents.
But you're not interested in a job?
No.
Okay. Couldn't think of one, like ambassador to to London?
I think that would be a federal.
Let's create one. We got a lot of money. We could make it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
All right, thanks.
So it was close to 24,000 vote margin in New Haven. We haven't seen that. The big news in two previous governor elections was how the biggest margin of victory for a Democrat running statewide was in New Haven, 18,500. The big question was, oh, and we do have a question from Molly Wheeler we're going to get to in a moment. Two questions from Molly Wheeler. Sorry about that, Molly. But 18,500, could Ned Lamont get that and win? He got 23,500, I think it was, margin of victory in New Haven. It was incredible. It was like a 29-6 or something. No, it was like a 27-4, 30-36. What did you think about how that happened? Because to be honest, people were not excited about voting for Ned. We didn't find a single one all day. No one said, I can't wait to go vote for Ned Lamont, but they were pumped up to vote.
I think that especially for the African-American community, and those who are older people really understand with this president that we have how critically important it is to get out to vote. And
so this was an anti-Trump vote.
And what an important right to sustain this is. I saw women who were elderly coming out in walkers.
Wow.
The mothers of our community in the rain.
That's right, right.
Yeah, to vote.
Yeah, Tom Breen was fine when he interviewed people. He went around with Pastor Steele and Ann Robinson, who's up there. Mm-hmm. And she and others were talking about North Carolina.
Right.
They're talking about remembering in their lifetime when it was pretty much illegal for them to vote and how they felt that that's on the way. And we saw that in Georgia again this year. And so that did seem to be a big motivation.
I think that was the motivation. I you know, of course, our friends at Unite Here, they have an operation, and maybe it's New Haven Rising. Excuse me, not Unite
Same
Here.
Thing.
Well, I don't.
Of course, the same thing.
Technically, not.
Yeah, right.
But at any rate, you know, they were doing some work out there. The town committee was doing work. But I think people...
And Pastor Steele in the black community, there was a real effort there, too.
Oh, no, Pastor Steele did a great job. He worked for the Lamont campaign. And so I think that... And they did a lot of door knocking. And I just think that there was a sense that while we couldn't vote in Georgia, while we couldn't vote in Florida, we can vote here. And people came out and voted here.
There you go. That's a happy story. There was an unhappy story, which was how the election was conducted. I mean, do you know that it's been 2 weeks later, we still don't have the official list, the breakdown of ward by ward, what people voted for whom? You know that we used to get that the next morning?
You know,
we were the last one in the state to report. Yeah.
Yes, and which is why Bob was on pins and needles.
That's right, that's right.
Well, as you know, and I think that...
Which should be the bottom line. Next time they should hang out with Bob at the Secretary of State's office and monitor how well the count is going based on his mood and the information he gets to get promptly.
Well, you know, I think that it's really important that we figure out how to do a much better job at elections, really. There's some things, though, that are not anyone's fault. Part of it is, and don't ask me why so much of it happened in New Haven, but when the ballots got wet, they jammed the machines.
But if somebody said, did it rain only in New Haven? Because we had three machines come in some of these places.
I know.
And they all didn't work.
And so, you know, I think that it...
New York had the same problem.
Yeah, so that it was troubling. And, you know, honestly, they must have had some kind of problem down there in Florida because they're now hand counting a lot of the ballots. You know, it's really important. Look, unfortunately, I know a lot of people would love to blame the mayor for this one, but elected officials, aside from the one that is specifically, the two that are specifically elected to conduct elections, are the ones that set the system up.
Right, like in Georgia. If you're the Secretary of State running for governor, you run the election.
Yeah, yeah. And so our Secretary of the State then works with our Registrar of Voters.
And why is it the Democratic Registrar of Voters? Why? How come the Democratic Registrar is sort of first among equals when we have two?
You know, that may be just, I don't know. I don't
think there's
a
reason. I think it might have something to do with majority party, but I'm not sure.
It might have something to do with that, because it always was, even before the current Registrar.
Yeah. So I know that, as you said, the mayor, and this is a good thing, the mayor does not have any legal authority to have elections run. Otherwise, you could rig them for yourself. Not that you would. I'm saying that one would.
Well,
one
I wouldn't, but some might. So. Yeah. People are protected, right?
But people still look to the mayor.
Right.
Because you're the government. You're the face. And you got so many calls that I saw you when I was down there at the Hall of Records trying to figure out what the heck was going on. So were you.
Yeah.
And you were in the Registrar of Voters office saying that your phone was reading off the hook with people getting told to go to the wrong voting places, the machine's not working, the lies, the workers not there, confusion. What can you do?
Well, the only thing that I can do, and I've done it. I did it after last year, which was a problem too. And I basically asked the Registrar of Voters if she would hire a company that looks at LEED, which is basically it's a way in which you try to figure out the most efficient way to carry out an operation. And so there's a consulting firm that does that. They do it with manufacturing, but they also do it with processes in the city. So, but the problem was that after she had agreed to hire a company that could do this, it just took a long time to get the contract and everything done. By the time this year rolled around, the contract was signed 2 weeks before the election. Mm. So I'm hoping that at least what I read was that they were going to the polls to look at, but some of
what's the name of the company? Do you know?
I've forgotten the name of the company. Yeah.
So I had a real feeling, because I was there watching, for instance, I was at Edgewood School at 2 in the morning, starting at 1:40 to 2, when the top
of the morning?
Yeah, we were going to all the polling places to see how the election was broken, Markeisha and I.
Oh, wow.
And so at 2 in the morning, there was the Registrar of Voters. They were in the room saying, A couple machines are broken. We'll do a hand count now. 1,900 votes they were going to count by hand. This was hours after 99% of the state had already given all the results in.
Mm-hmm.
So they sit down and they have three people who are exhausted because they've all been up since 4 in the morning. And they're saying, okay, State Senate, Gary. And then all these people were writing Gary on a piece of paper. So 20 minutes later, they'd gotten through two ballots. And Anna Marchand, the alderman, was coming in with what kind of sandwiches? Ham sandwiches to try to keep people awake. Then hours later, they gave up on that and brought a fourth machine. At 1 in the morning, we were at Ward 26, where the election, the registrar of voters allowed someone to go home. And they said, we'll just lock up the ballots for the night. And it turned out that Jack Keyes, the former probate judge, was in the room. He said, no, that's illegal. They have to continue to be counted. He can go home, but somebody else has to count them. So then we were watching this poor woman who'd also been up since 4 or 5 try to feed ballots into yet another machine, and they were getting caught. And I have to say, and then after all that, after the whole state had reported days after, at almost close to midnight, I think it was, the head moderator and the rest of our voter went to Secretary of State's database, say, we've got the numbers now, and they pressed the button. They forgot to press save, and it all disappeared. So then on Thursday, illegally in a basement room in the Hall of Records, where they wouldn't let me in to watch, even though it is illegal, we looked it up, and we were filing a count. They started over counting stuff. The Secretary of State sent someone on an emergency basis, a lawyer whose last name is Surgeon, which I loved. Surgeon was sent. And they were starting all over with absentee ballots and stuff, trying to get a number so that finally, late Thursday night, they sent the final numbers to Hartford. But they had no breakdown. We still have no breakdown 2 weeks later on what the wards were. So here's what I come to on this, is I don't believe that every vote counts in New Haven. I am convinced that it is not an accurate count. That if you vote in that election, you do not know if your vote. We know that most of them were counted.
Wrong, Paul.
It can't be true. I watched when they were feeding stuff in the machine. They had to give up on stuff. I watched at 3 in the morning when they're writing down Gary on pieces of paper. And weeks later, we still don't have a count by ward. I think this was such a colossal failure of democracy. And you're right. You have no authority over this. This was such a colossal failure of democracy. After we had two failed elections and public hearings about how to improve it and hundreds of people volunteering to help who were not enlisted. I don't believe we counted in a big way. We had the biggest margin in the state. It was accurate that we had a huge majority for Ned Lamont. It was accurate that people came out and voted. New Haven was heard. But I honestly believe, I am so sure of it, I would bet the House that lots of votes didn't count.
I hope you're wrong. I hope that the votes counted, that maybe trying to figure out where they came from might be a problem, but that every vote, I'm hoping every vote counted.
And I
really believe that was the intent.
Oh, sure. I don't think there was any cheating. I didn't see any. Matter of fact, the Republican campaign had sent observers down. The early day, there was some tension. What are they trying to watch? Discourage people voting? But in the day, the Democrats and Republicans observing were buddies. They felt like they were in it together. The Democrats are happy the Republicans there because they could see that nobody was cheating.
Yeah.
And that nothing ill intent was going on. And they were in it together, like, let's get these votes counted.
So I think that all of the votes got counted where there may be issues is attributing them to certain wards. You know, I think that we all know that this is unacceptable and that we could do a better job. And my challenge to those powers that be is to do a better job next time. One of the things that I didn't understand, I vote over at Edgewood School. And so I went
there. You were there at 6 in the morning with Chris Murphy.
Yeah, I was there, and I got to vote. But then I noticed that there were those little desks that you can write your votes out on. That there were 4 of them, and then I was told by the registrar of voters that I could not go in to any of the other polls. I absolutely had to go into Ross Woodward. And on my way out, I noticed now we get about 2,500 people who vote at Edgewood School. They get about 300, 400 who vote at Ross Woodward. They had more of those desks. And one of the things that was slowing things down at Edgewood was the fact that they didn't have enough desks. And I'm thinking to myself, who makes these decisions about, you know, the equipment that people have? And, you know, the other thing that I think needs to happen, but I want to hear from the consultant, is that the machines ought to be tested before. I mean, is there a rule against that?
Yeah.
Because Maybe they've been sitting too long. Maybe the machines themselves got damp, depending upon where they were stored. And we've got to make sure they work.
All right.
Just a thought.
I like that you have a more positive view of the world than I do. I'm glad that you're not a cynical reporter. You're Mayor Tony Harp, and you're here on Mayor Monday, along with the rest of us on WNHH, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, live streamed at New Haven Independent. And Molly Wheeler writes in, remark, it's a bummer to have a governor that sends his kids to private school in Greenwich. Ugh, it would be great to have someone with skin in public schools. And speaking of schools, Molly Wheeler, thank you for listening, Molly, and sending questions. I noticed you switched this week to the Independent Facebook page from WNHH. Another Board of Education question from me. What are Mayor Harp's thoughts on the idea of an entirely elected Board of Education? So not just what it is now with her as mayor, but in general. The group Journey for Justice, for example, rejects the idea of an appointed board members in work for education equity. It's part of the We Choose campaign. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, here's my take, and I think that I've said it before. And even when I was on the Board of Alders, it became clear to me I wasn't the mayor then. The mayor ultimately is held responsible for whatever happens. And so there's got to be a way that the mayor has appointments to this board. And so I think that some of the most difficult, well, long story short, so I think having an all-elected board of education where you have people that you can't hold accountable except once every 4 years is problematic.
Also, it's this whole question of how do you define democracy versus representative democracy? And right. I'm going to reveal a little bias here. I think elected Board of Ed sounds like a great concept and more democratic. And the old way did not work when it was fully appointed because the previous mayor controlled us so much that no questions were ever asked and there was no scrutiny. People didn't even show up till we started taking attendance. But we've had more fighting and infighting that doesn't have to do with kids' education. It has to do with who gets contracts or who is insulted by whom. Since the election, and not, I don't mean to make an anti-democratic thing against election. I think it's a question of how many positions do you elect versus do you elect a mayor every 2 years and alders every 2 years, and then that's your time to weigh in on a whole bunch of decisions that are made by a whole bunch of people.
Could you go over that again? I don't think I understood what you said.
Does it make more sense to have a representative democracy where you're not voting for every last position like Board of Ed? Where politics takes place at election time when you elect a mayor and board of alders.
Right.
And that you do have, maybe you can vary who appoints the members of the Board of Ed, but that the theory of a partly elected board has not turned out in practice since we've had an elected board.
I think we've had more complaints about the Board of Education since we've had the hybrid board. And so if that's what you're saying, I would absolutely agree. And I do think the accountability place really is, as I said before, is with the mayor, but no matter who that mayor is. Mm-hmm.
And I guess what Molly's arguing, and I think that's a legitimate another argument, is the ultimate accountability, because we have a hybrid, partly elected, partly appointed, that a fully elected might be more accountable, so those people are it. Molly says, I'm not for all elected necessarily, just trying to think through people's ideas and the topic. And I think they are really good questions. And I think...
I think it's a good question. I just... think that if you sort of observe what we've done by having the hybrid, that it's actually made it kind of tough to operate the school district. And I think it's good for, I was concerned when I first joined the Board of Education and everybody agreed with everything. I think that there has to be a place for debate, but it can't be the kind of thing that makes it difficult to move the district forward.
And maybe some of the appointing could be done by other agencies. Maybe Alders can appoint somebody, maybe have Republican participation the way they do on other boards, you know, that kind of thing.
No, that's a possibility as well.
Yeah. It's also much harder than ever to sell waterbeds and futons and bongs on Whaley Avenue.
Yes.
By St. Luke's Church. I always loved that it was like right next to St. Luke's Church. Rubber Mats did that for 45 years. But they're going out of business now. They're going out of business sale. Mm. I was not among the people who were sad. I don't think I want to go into that. But if you've read William Finnegan's work about the role it played in the crack trade, I think it's not always such a happy, genial, hippie image, but you know, where you got your powder to mix the cocaine. But in any case, you know, it was a business that was beloved at Whaley and Sperry. 45 years, they're out of business sale. We had an article, a lot of people cared about it, felt emotional about it. They didn't quite make it through until the era of legal marijuana, where they might have like had a boom. What I loved is that the owner says it was because of my city taxes that I had to go out of business. Then we looked into it, and he had a foreclosure on one building he owned. He was evicted from another apartment, and then he admitted that he couldn't sell the futons anymore because IKEA was here, and they outsold them. And then he admitted a lot of the drug paraphernalia he couldn't sell because the internet, everyone's been buying it there. So I think it's kind of convenient for people to blame city taxes.
I think it is.
And changing, you know, times.
Yeah. And we don't even know if his taxes went up, did they?
I don't know.
I mean, because some people's taxes, the value of their property went down, so their taxes didn't really go up. So.
But anyway, but it is a passing of an era.
It is, yeah, it yeah, is. Yeah, yeah.
But there's a new era maybe on College Street with the District Ballroom. So for months we've been talking about who's going to take over that empty spot. That's a nightclub-type venue spot at the bottom of the Crown Street Garage mm-hmm. at College and Crown, where I used to love going to Clarence Course Gesture. It's been a bunch of other things, boppers. And two groups really wanted it, and the parking authority had to decide what to do. And they decided last week, and it was clear from everything they said. It was a hilarious meeting. Tom Breen has a video of it. The whole meeting consisted of all the commissioners saying how much they loved the proposal by the Schubert Theater, Long Wharf Theater, Albertus Magnus to do a whole bunch of different kind of theater spaces in there and training and so community-wide. And they said, and we love it so much, we're therefore going to unanimously approve the other one, which was the College Street Music Hall runs, the people who run that place, very successful. I went to a great concert there last week with her, this trio of women, Americana music, loved it. Mm-hmm. They said, we got your money you wanted up front. We're ready to get started. We're going to bring lots of people there, lots of shows for in between the size audiences for the concert clubs in the district and for the College Street Music Hall, concert hall. And the authority felt they had no choice but go with the one that actually would produce some revenue for the city and bring crowds. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that we are in a difficult fiscal position, and that while I think everyone was intrigued by the Schubert proposal, there was some thinking that perhaps they could collaborate. And that was my idea. I do think that we needed to have an organization that could immediately get it up and running.
Because the other group said they're going to need a whole year to see if they can even raise the millions to do it.
Right. And the thought was, can we get them together and work together? And then right across the street is the high school, and there is performance space in there that is. There's a very strong connection to the Schubert and others. And then the first floor of that area is going to be a dance studio at some point. And could we not use some of that space when the kids are not in school?
Well, I think this came up too as well, because you had said this weeks ago you'd like to see everybody accommodated downtown. They can be. The Parker 30 also owns storefronts across from the Criterion Theater, the Bowtie Cinemas on Temple. And those have been complete losers. Places last there for only months and they go out of business. And it's not their fault, in my mm-hmm. opinion. I think it's a very tough area to have retail storefront because it overhangs. It's kind of, you don't walk there much. It's kind of a car drive through. And then it's forbidding with the way the garage mm-hmm. kind of is built over it. For every reason, the business don't last. Why wouldn't the parking authority put, with all those storefronts, the different, it's even a better kind of layout for what the Schubert, Long Wharf, and Albertus wanted to do? Because they wanted to have lots of smaller spaces for like rehearsal spaces, Joe's Pub type space. Why not take a bunch of those storefronts and revive that block? Since you got the movie theater across the street, people living across the street, that would become a destination.
That's a good idea. I wonder if they thought about it, Paul. Maybe now they'll consider it.
Yeah. Well, let's hope the negotiations go well on the district ballroom, because I think it'd be fun. It's been fun how many good concerts you could see around here. Well, and they're going to be even more.
You point out that, you know, the city is really like four or five things can happen at a time.
On a Monday night.
And be full. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, New Haven is happening. There's no question about it. We fight about lots of stuff and things don't go wrong. And you heard me whining about the election. But, you know, the truth is so much is happening here. People want to live here because it's a fun city hitting its stride.
It really is. It really is.
And then now some people want to build a hotel down at the IKEA, mm-hmm. the old Pirelli building, which is empty. And last week, the IKEA went to the City Plan Commission to get approval for site plans so they could put a hotel there. And then there was this surprise attack on it from alders and people affiliated with Unite Here, with the union that represents Yale workers as well as hotel workers, and has been pushing hotels to have neutrality agreements so the unions so there could be unionized workers there. And they tried to kill the site plan with a new argument about how the way we've done it for 100 or more years of how you give authority for a site plan isn't legal and the alders should have to decide it. And your administration agreed with them. You wanted them to delay, but the City Plan Commission ruled against you. They had a legal opinion saying that this is the legal process under state law, and they approved the site plan so you can come in. Any thoughts on that one?
Well, you know, I think that we had wanted to slow it down somewhat and to be able to have the full conversation about who should be making the final decision. But, you know, one of the things that's interesting about the City Plan Commission is they're very independent.
Yeah.
And so they did their thing.
Yeah, Leslie Radcliffe's on that commission. She was saying this is, you know what? The larger issue here is, should people be able to build hotels in New Haven if they don't have a unionized workforce? And I think it's a very fair question.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people say, and I'm very sympathetic to union people who say, if we're going to create jobs, why create them if you can't afford to live on them? And then other people also have a fair opinion sometimes who say those decisions shouldn't be made by people who are elected to commissions and boards that have legal authorities to make decisions based on other factors, and we want the tax revenue from these businesses. And where I've always come down is I think the unions have a good point. I wish it could be out in the open, because they weren't really arguing about who should make the decisions on site plans last week any more than they were arguing on the issues they claimed they were for the Dunkin' Hotel. They're arguing about whether there should be a neutrality agreement. And I guess under law, they can't express it that way. So what I'm wondering is if instead of my being critical of it not being stated out in the open, maybe for legal reasons, it just has to be understood. And maybe it's not a bad thing that hotel people know they have to have a union if they want to come to New Haven.
Well, I think that they should know that now. I mean, look, my mother used to do that work. She used to clean rooms in hotels in Salt Lake City. And, it's back-breaking work. And people make very little money, and it's just people who know that they need to work in order to live and support their families. But, they often work hard, have to work long hours in order to make adequate amount of money. And to have an organization that says that we want to have decent benefits and decent pay is what we should all be fighting for here in New Haven.
So you like the idea that if hotels are built in New Haven, they should have unionized workers?
That workers should have a right to be able to negotiate with the owners.
Yeah,
I believe that.
Can hotels afford to build hotels on that basis if most of the industry doesn't? For instance, if someone's looking at New Haven, like I know in Route 34, we haven't had anyone build a hotel there. I guess the numbers don't work. Until we get nationally hotel companies to have to use unions in most places. Most places, they don't have the pressure they have in Chicago, New York, New Haven. Is it going to be possible for them to build, or is it not the end of the world if we don't have more hotels?
No, I think it's important. I really think we should have hotels. I think that part of the market, one of the things that we see is Yale University. They do a lot of meetings, bring people from around the country, if not around the world, and often those meetings that last over a day or two occur outside of New Haven. And so I think it's important, but it may be something that we have to think about. How do we, since we think it's important, how do we find a way to subsidize that?
So you would subsidize hotels?
Well, I would subsidize it if they were unionized and paid a living wage.
So you think the solution to this impasse might be?
Well, if money's the reason they don't do it, then let's take that off the table.
So where would the money come from?
Well, I don't know. I mean, at least for a certain point in time, anybody that builds large buildings and facilities in our town gets a tax break.
So maybe include the tax break that exists. Well, does it already exist, like at IKEA at the Pearly Building? Will they be able to get that phase in? You're talking about the phase in, right?
The phase in, right.
Would the phase in apply there?
Well, I think it would. It would. It depends upon how much retrofitting has to go on in the building. And it would seem to me, since it was an office building and will now be a hotel, that they will be looking at getting that for 7 years. Well, maybe we could look at extending it if they're willing to have a neutrality agreement and there's an ability for their workers to vote for whether or not they'd like to be unionized.
Because I always have been sympathetic to the idea that if you're going to create a job, we want to create it so you can live on it.
Absolutely.
And so are we creating a hotel, live, work, learn, play, the Coliseum, the never-ending saga? What's the latest?
Well, I think that they that there is interest with the Live, Work, Learn, and Play to partner with other developers to develop a hotel. Not a hotel, but to develop the property. And so for me, the real question is, and I'll be honest, I think we need a big hotel. And so I'm waiting to see whether or not this collaboration will provide that.
You mean the new partner they have?
Yes.
Okay, so we're still in limbo there on that one.
We are.
Okay, but we're not in limbo about a second garage at the train station. So they now, we got the design. Mm-hmm. They had an early design for building a second garage. The State Department of Transportation in New Haven did not like it. Your administration spoke up. Citizens spoke up. I love the way that people usually scream at each other when the state does something wrong. You're all there together, you know, saying, stop them. They have a new design. It has a room for hundreds more bicycles than it used to. Doesn't have everything you want. It doesn't have a bus transfer depot or retail on the first floor, right? What do you think overall? Are we okay with this one? Ready to roll?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we are. One of the things that is in that agreement that we have is the new garage and then the ability to retrofit the old garage and part of Union Station to have retail restaurants there. And so I think we're very excited about that prospect.
Good. Anything going to be different with the Lamont administration, like who gets to control the first garage and things like that?
I don't know. You know, we haven't really decided whether or not we're going to make that ask yet.
But you did meet.
It's out there.
The mayors met with Governor Lamont at Willow Street, you and the other big city mayors. I love how we talk about big city mayors in Connecticut.
I know,
they laugh at us in Detroit and Los Angeles, but we do call
them. Look, we're the size of Houston as a state. Connecticut's a big city.
You know, it is. You know. With a lot of rural parts.
Yeah.
So how'd that meeting go with Ned Lamont?
You know, it went really well. He was very interested in what the mayors were thinking and what was important to them. And I guess the overall outcome was that he said that he would meet with us from time to time to get our sense of the way in which things are going and how his policies impact our cities.
And you talked about educational cost sharing, ECS. That's the formula by which cities and towns are reimbursed for educational costs by the state,
right?
State aid for education. And the argument you are making, if I understand correctly, is that that formula hasn't been changed. But New Haven has more students than it used to have.
Right.
Other towns have fewer students.
Right.
But the numbers are staying the same. Why is that happening? And can Ned Lamont change it?
Well, you know, he can have a proposal to change it. You know, those are the kinds of things that are changed by the legislature.
Yeah.
And so I think that if his administration runs the numbers and comes up with even the existing formula so that we are making sure that even if we get this, even if the bottom line number, the $1.5 billion, whatever it is these days, is the same number that you run the formula so that it's based on the number of students that you have and the qualities of those students. And I think that most of the mayors that were there agreed that we've got to do something about educational cost sharing.
And what hurt us mostly, like now we got, after this election, we now have blue wave on November, so we have near super majorities of Democrats in both houses of the legislature plus the Democratic governor. But I remember the last time we got hurt at the last minute with education money enough to anger a state judge was when it was the New Haven sympathetic majority that gave more to the suburbs, was like increasing, I think it was in Westport and taking Bridgeport and Hamden from New Haven, in order to get suburban votes to pass the budget. Is that going to happen again?
I'm hoping not, but I think that we've been very disappointed lately in what it's required to get votes from the suburbs to get things passed. And you know, even though there are, and you know, certainly it's great to have a majority, a large majority of Democrats, but you know, we're a big tent. Democrats doesn't mean that we see things the same way.
And you've also been talking about our spiritual temperature or our sort of civic comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y, not C-O-M-E-D-Y, mm-hmm. in New Haven since the election. You had a prayer service on the green with ministers of different faith, clergy of different faith. I guess you're going to Morrow Sheridan School on Tuesday to read a book, and Kindness Day. What's that all about?
Well, you know, I typically go to especially Morrill Sheridan. They always invite me to read, But we did say that we are a city of kindness. And, you know, there are some mayors across the United States who actually have run on the whole idea of kindness. Louisville, Kentucky, Anaheim, California. And so I think it's really important that we find a way to promote the values that we think are important to have a safe and thriving community. And kindness is one of those values.
All right. Maybe we'll give you absolute power and you can legislate it too. Or is this going to have to be the bully button?
Well, you know, I think it's really important that we demonstrate it by the way that we act as towards one another. I think the fact that we have management teams, that's in a way, it's a way to outreach to neighbors and is a form of outreach and kindness and giving voice. The work that you do with the New Haven Independent is in many respects a form of kindness and reaching out to people so that they have information.
And you saw the Hill management team, Hill North, they have the new Hill South, has the new banners up on Washington Avenue of the heroes of that neighborhood.
So I think those are things that you do that make people know that in New Haven you're valued and you're cared for.
Any plans for Thanksgiving?
My son is going to have his first Thanksgiving at his house, my grandchild. And so we're fighting over who's going to make the stuffing for.
So it used to be the tryptophan. Is that what in turkey that makes people happy?
Is that what it is?
I think, is that what it is? Sleep. And happy. But okay. I think that what we're going to have at your table, my table, is that smile that the newborn has. And it just biologically makes you just so happy.
It does make you happy. You don't need the turkey for it.
Yeah, you don't need the turkey or the tofurkey. Well, thank you so much, Mayor Harp, for joining us today on Mayor Monday. It's always a pleasure. Great way to start the week. Thanks, everyone who wrote in. And Molly Wheeler, thanks for those great comments. I also want to thank Gateway Community College and Bertrand Moses PC for providing financial support. We're going to take it out, the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.